Today on CityCast Pittsburgh. You're sad about the Choco Taco, but when's the last time you even had one? The reason behind all these Protect Trans Kids signs popping up in neighborhoods, and a Pennsylvania representative votes against legislation for same-sex and interracial marriage right before his gay son's wedding. It's Friday, July 29th. I'm Morgan Moody, and this is CityCast Pittsburgh. Every Friday, we have our Friday News Roundup. The voices change, but the concept does not. Today, we have newsletter editor Francesca DiBecco. Hey, Francesca.
Hey, happy to be here.
And producer Mallory Folk.
Hey, Morgan.
Hello. So let's start with this one story. I saw this picking up some steam on Twitter, I don't know, maybe over the weekend? I guess not. What's time anymore? Just a couple days ago. Pennsylvania Representative Glenn G.T., I don't even like his nickname, Thompson, voted against a House bill that will require states to recognize same-sex and interracial marriages just days before he went to his gay son's wedding.
Ugh, Morgan, I typically like to reserve my political opinions on things, but this is the definition of hypocritical.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, how did Thompson defend this? Did his office like have any kind of response once this story got out?
Yeah, his office said that they described this bill as an election year messaging stunt for Democrats.
Right.
So, you know, literally voting against legislation that would guarantee your son the right to even have the wedding that he just had, but it's a stunt.
So, why does this matter locally? Like, where does Thompson represent here?
Yeah, some places that are pretty close. Butler County, you know, that's, what, 45 minutes to an hour away, depending on what part you're driving to. Armstrong County, Indiana County, Venango, Clarion. So some pretty close by places. The vote happened on July 19th. I think it was brought to the House on July 18th. By a vote of 267 to 157, the House of Representatives passed the Respect for Marriage Act, which says that marriages performed in one state have to be recognized in all states, regardless of your sex, your race, your national origin. That they also looped in same-sex marriage with that as well. So
I mean, I'm assuming that they're introducing this act right now just because of everything that's been happening recently.
Of course. Yeah. After, you know, Roe fell and Clarence Thomas, I just such a long pause between him because I just, you know, see red when I think about him. But after he also said that, you know, they're liable to come after other rights, same-sex marriage, interracial marriage, which is also hypocritical considering Clarence Thomas is a black man married to a white woman. But
yeah, I guess hypocritical is the word of the day.
but yeah, the Respect for Marriage Act would basically like keep those laws in place, including interracial couples that want to get married. And it seems like a long time ago, but that ruling, the 1967 ruling of, you know, Loving v. Virginia, it's not that long ago.
So, I mean, is there any good news on this front? Any way to end the story on a slightly positive note?
Well, for one, it still has to get through the Senate. It's not likely to happen before their August recess, so you know, you got a little bit of time to breathe, but it has to pass. Chuck Schumer really is the person that has to set a date for all of this. And he needs to find 10 Republicans to sway to get like 51 votes will pass it, but 60 votes will make it like pretty safe.
We will certainly be watching where this one goes.
Anyways, moving on, Francesca, what's going on with these signs that have been popping up over some Pittsburgh neighborhoods? It says they say, what, protect trans kids?
Yeah, talking about some more LGBTQ rights, specifically in our city. If you strolled through some neighborhoods in the past month, you may have noticed the signs popping up in yards. Like you said, they say protect trans kids with trans pride flag colors in the background. And there's a ton of these in my neighborhood on the north side. I've seen a bunch of them on my walks. And so they're really spreading throughout the city.
What is the background with these signs? Where are they coming from?
Yeah, so Pittsburgh LGBTQ Charities is partnering with Commonwealth Press to distribute these yard signs. They started when they wanted to send a supportive message to transgender youth in our community after a local family pressed charges against their neighbor. They alleged that their teen daughter was targeted by transphobic slurs. Sean O'Donnell was the father of the daughter who this was reported by. And he reported that Darian Balcom harassed his family by putting up a large sign reading, "Transing kids is abuse and homophobia." It was in clear view of his trans daughter's bedroom window.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's just really disheartening and sad. So Balcom's lawyers argued that she was exercising her constitutional right to free speech, but the magistrate on this case, Leah Williams Duncan, she said that the content of the sign, you know, constituted fighting words, which is one of the few one of the few exceptions to the First Amendment. So yeah, glad to see, you know, her taking that stance on this case.
So then what was the outcome of the case? What did she decide?
Yeah, so that just happened this week. Darian Balcom was found guilty of a summary offense and was charged with a $200 fine. But, you know, it just kind of goes to show with these other signs, these positive signs popping up around Pittsburgh, like how much the community does embrace inclusivity and how much we're looking out for each other. So I think it's, you know, a positive thing that is coming out of this really terrible and sad predicament.
So if any of our listeners want to show their support and put one of these signs on their lawn, is there a place they can go to get them, or how do they get them?
Yeah, you can request a sign online. There's a form. Warning, it is a pretty lengthy form, so give yourself some time to submit your answers. But, you know, the donations help cover the cost of additional signs. There is no fee for the signs, but donations do help cover the cost for additional signs, and all the donations are going back to producing more, you know, with Commonwealth Press. And right now there's pickup locations currently in Northside, Swissville, and Brentwood. And they've also launched a GoFundMe to subsidize production of some like 500 more signs. So these are really spreading rapidly around the burg.
Hey, CityCast listeners, this episode is brought to you by the Pittsburgh Opera. You know, a few weeks ago, some friends and I went to La Traviata, and I confess, it was my very first opera. But yes, it was incredible. So I was very excited to see that they've got a new show coming to the Byam Theater. It's April 27th through May 5th, called The Passion of Mary Caldwell Dawson. It's about a real person, a Pittsburgher and heroine, who in 1943 is managing a million moving pieces with the National Negro Opera Company. They're all set to perform on a floating barge just to avoid all the segregated venues, but bad weather strikes and they've got to figure out a way forward. If you want to know what happens next, you'll just have to attend. The show is in English. It does have a little dialogue. It's kind of short for something operatic, just over an hour, and tickets start at just $15. There are all kinds of discounts for students, teachers, seniors, and veterans. Plus, the Pittsburgh Opera's new rideshare program gives patrons up to $60 worth of Uber vouchers to get them to and from the show. If this sounds up your alley, get your tickets now for The Passion of Mary Caldwell Dawson at pittsburghopera.org.
That's a very heartwarming story, Francesca. And from a heartwarming story to one that's really just for the ice cold hearted, the ice cream industry. One day you're on top of the world with your butter pecan flavor, and the next day you're out. Mallory, what's going on?
Yeah, and I'll say that I promise this is going to be a Pittsburgh story. We just have to take a little detour to get there.
Scenic route.
Yeah, so, you know, you may well be aware that we learned this week Klondike is discontinuing the Choco Taco. A Klondike rep says they've...
Yeah,
RIP. A Klondike rep says they've experienced an unprecedented spike in demand across their portfolio and had to make tough decisions about trimming that portfolio, which, like...
What's the Klondike portfolio outside of Choco Tacos? I want to see this.
As someone who's not in the business world, I just, like, don't associate the word portfolio with frozen ice cream tacos. It just sounds really silly to me, but you know,
it's like in a file folder.
The rough and tumble world of ice cream.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, anyway, as I was learning about this, I was surprised to find out that the Choco Taco is originally a Philly treat. Apparently there have been like a ton of myths about where it came from. And so back in 2016, Eater did this deep dive into the history. And so the definitive story is that it was invented by a former ice cream truck driver named Alan Drazen in 1983.
How did he get the idea for the Choco Taco?
So at the time, he was working as a manager at this Philly ice cream company called Jack and Jill, and places were kind of trying to create their own branded ice cream treats. And I guess this was when there was sort of a boom in Mexican chain restaurants, like Chi-Chi's was really big.
For which we are grateful.
Some of us. I lived in El Paso. I came to learn that Chi-Chi's is not it. But
their fried ice cream was like, you know, such a big thing.
It was. And I guess, like, you know, Drazen told Eater that Mexican food was the fastest growing segment of the food industry at the time. And the taco was the most recognizable shape. And yeah, like you said, that fried ice cream was big. So he kind of got inspired to make this ice cream taco, which means that along with being the birthplace of the U.S., Philly can also claim that it's the birthplace of the Choco Taco.
What does this have to do with Pittsburgh? I know we we have a CityCast Philly, our sister podcast from across the state, East vs. West. They're launching soon, so we're excited to have them. But isn't this more like up their alley than ours?
Well, so yeah, here's where it comes back to why we're including this on the Pittsburgh pod, is that I've seen some online chatter that this means Pittsburgh is winning out over Philly. Because, you know, another item in the Klondike portfolio, the Klondike bar, that's still going strong. And that's considered a Pittsburgh treat, or at least Pittsburgh likes to claim it. It was invented at Isley's, which is that iconic local chain known for its ice cream and its chipped ham. As a Pittsburgh Jew, got to say, I've never tried the chipped ham, but all in on the ice cream.
So Pittsburgh claims the Klondike bar, but did we actually invent it here?
So sadly, I'm having a lot of Pittsburgh myths busted this week. I just learned during our step tour interview that we don't have the most bridges in the U.S. That distinction goes to Houston. Turns out the Klondike bar was not invented in Pittsburgh. I was reading this article by friend of the pod, our newest contributor, Rosalind Colgan, and she said the Klondike bar got its start in Ohio, which is where Isley's was founded in the early 1900s, although there was a period when you could really only get the Klondike in Ohio and in Pittsburgh, where, you know, that's where the Isley's were. So we lay some claim to it, but we're not the birthplace.
Yeah, you know, I saw this book by Heinz History Center writer Brian Bucko. He wrote a whole, kind of history on Isley's. It's called Isley's Chipped Ham, Klondikes, and Other Tales from Behind the Counter. And I was just looking at some of the pages, and it looks like at the very beginning, you could get a Klondike bar for 28 cents each. So imagine that. Little fun fact.
So I guess to close out the show, what's everyone's favorite ice cream truck treat? I know it's not the Choco Taco. Morgan, we can start with you.
Mine is the chocolate eclair, because everything else is always sold out.
Lead producer Megan Harris, what about you?
Also the chocolate eclair, but very much on purpose. I had it like every day in high school.
Francesca?
Yeah, it's been a minute since I've had an ice cream truck treat, but I am nostalgic for the strawberry shortcake. I love those crumbly outside bits.
Mine is also the chocolate eclair. I love that, chocolate on chocolate on chocolate.
I can't believe we all have the same style of ice cream truck treat. I feel like it's such an age thing, and it's just hilarious that like Francesca is the youngest of all of us and it's still the same, but a slight twist with the strawberry,
just a little fruity.
That's all for the week here on CityCast Pittsburgh, and what a week it's been. Megan Harris is our lead producer. Our newsletter editor is Francesca DeBecco. Mallory Folk produces the show. And our host is me, Morgan Moody. Music is by Benji. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends, leave us a great rating, leave us a great review, and of course, subscribe to our morning newsletter, all the things. We'll be back on Monday with more news from around the city, so we'll see you then. Have a great weekend. Sweating ourselves abroad, like, so hot.